The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye-Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
Leadership Platform, I'm Adrian Groenewald. We're live and we have in the studio a great panel of incredible experience and then our special guest, Ferial Hafagee, a leader. Ferial, your background seemed to have played a role in you becoming a journalist. Is that so? And you have a legal background though. You studied law, but you ended up being a journalist. Always knew it from young, did you?
From young, but it wasn't a career choice. It was more about freedom. I've written often, I think, that I felt myself imprisoned by apartheid, literally. And I wanted to be part of change, and I felt that journalism offered the best way of helping to change a system.
You weren't going to go the teacher or the doctor route or that. You went for that.
Of course. I mean, I come from a community that prized doctors and lawyers or accountants, and my mum was prodding me in that direction. But I always knew, I think, at the heart of me that I wanted to write and to be a journalist.
And that's still a passion of yours. You still love doing that.
Absolutely. I mean, these days we are all journalists. Anybody with a Twitter account, a Facebook account, it's so much easier than before. We don't own the message, and that's made for a more democratic and interesting sector. Pretty exciting. So we don't have the copyright any longer.
So what's the source of your motivation today? What the real source of what? Because you do have seem to have passion, a drive to get through difficult times. What drives Ferial Hafagee?
Well, I hope it's not doesn't come out sounding glib, but it's the same thing. Is I feel freedom and democracy to be precious things. So at the center of my working life is the betterment of society. And I think that can sometimes annoy people because they say I come across like an evangelist or a zealot. That was the last thing the ANC said to me at a meeting they called me to for a speech I'd made, that you have to not be activist and journalist. You just have to be observer, interpreter of your society and not be an activist to change it. I find that distinction very hard to make.
So they're wrong if they say that. I mean, was it once like that? Or not?
I think there's a traditional view of journalism that all you are is an observer, an analyst, the objective, the neutral. But I don't come from that tradition. Although after I made that speech and was told off quite hectically by people who I've grown up with in the ANC or who I have been reporting on for 24 years, it made me think, go back and see I have to make distinctions in my work between reporting and between being a community activist and a social activist.
Because it seems like a big jump, because a journalist can be fairly young and there could be immaturity in some cases, yet it's so responsible. What you write forms people's opinions of President Zuma, of leaders in our community. And sometimes I guess there is some level of immaturity there, or age, or lack of wisdom maybe, and rather put it that way. But when you see yourself as more than just an interpreter, then you have to have that wisdom.
And you have to do your work, you know, and you also have to be fair. I wonder about political journalism sometimes. Do we engage enough? So before I criticize the small business minister and what he said on Somalia, like Somalians must just give their trade secrets to South Africans, then we'll solve all our entrepreneurial problems. Is it right that we simply criticize that, or should somebody sit down in a studio like this and really engage her? And I don't think we do that enough. And yet that's where we come from. We made this country by sitting across the table and trying to understand each other. And I'm not sure we do enough of that any longer.
Coming back to what Leon latched on to earlier is don't judge from a distance. You know, I guess journalists could have the opportunity to go to the source and say, Minister, would you like to comment on that? And sometimes they decline to comment and then you can't do much about that.
So it was nice to have lunch with President Zuma about 6 weeks ago on a Sunday, all the editors, and to understand why he feels like he does about the Nkandla money, and to understand his perspective, not agree with it, but just understand it.
Are we too hard on him on that? I was going to ask you a little later about
Hell no. 246 million is a lot of money in a poor country, in a poor region, and I think the public protector has got it right. Okay. So, I think
so you've listened to him carefully?
Very, very carefully.
You've studied the public no doubt you've engaged her as well in some manner.
Sure.
And you now sit back and say, objectively, as a passionate South African and an opinion leader, we're right. President Zuma's wrong.
Well, I think the president has to pay back some of that money because that's what's written in the public protector's report. It was an undue benefit. We've done our homework on this. So from President Nelson Mandela, Thabo Mbeki, even F.W. de Klerk, we didn't go back to P.W. Botha's era. Much less spending on the personal security on a president. Much, much less. On Nelson Mandela's home, we spent maybe 24 million.
Okay, step back again.
Sure.
Have you found your voice? You know that principle that Covey wrote about, I think, pretty much. You found your voice.
Absolutely. I think we're in a lucky space in South Africa. It's not Russia and it's not the DRC where journalists are get jailed for having a voice. And freedom has meant wonderful things. It's enabled me to find the voice. Now I sit with how do I mediate that voice? How do I give others equal say in the spaces that we have as journalists.
But we are fortunate, aren't we? I was saying the other day, I don't know if it was to this panel, but yes, President Zuma has his faults, but him and the system around him allows us to criticize a president like very few nations, perhaps, and to say anything and everything in parliament, and media can say what they feel and how they see it. There's incredible freedom, and that's a blessing.
So last week I had a makeup lunch with Jessie Duarte of the ANC, and she had been in Russia when that opposition leader was killed the other week outside her hotel. And that doesn't happen here, but I don't think that should make us complacent. I think freedom is something that has to be fought for and protected every day.
Your biggest leadership challenge you have faced thus far, personally? Would be what? Would it be the race furore in 2013?
Sure.
Would it be? So what would it be? What your biggest leadership challenge?
So the biggest internal one was the race furore at City Press. The biggest external one was the spear painting, running the story on it, attracting a national debate about it, and then pulling it down. And I don't think I made the correct leadership decision then. And I've spent 2 years apologizing for that.
What was the principle that you learned there, the leadership principle? The decision you made, that may be a technical decision, was to expose. What was the mistake you made? Let's just learn from it.
Well, it was put on the website, and the campaign began to be take it down, take it down, take it down. And I think I did the wrong thing by taking it down.
Is that the mistake you think?
Yeah,
you made?
I did it for peaceable reasons. That because we'd made our country as we had, because so many people were so upset and harmed and hurt by it, I thought the right thing to do is take it down and have the discussion. But in fact, for the time we were in, it was the wrong thing to do.
Okay, we'll come back to the race issue as well. But your biggest success, highlights of your career as a leader so far? Could be the Mandela interview, but you were young then.
I was a real appy then.
Yes. Maybe you didn't absorb it as much as you should have.
Certainly becoming editor of the Mail and Guardian was a big moment for me because it was my love newspaper. It was the one I grew up reading. That was wonderful. And then at City Press, I won the Naspers Fulweber Award for brave decision making, and that was certainly a highlight.
Okay, so what we said earlier, brave decision making. So that's not one of the traps you're stepping into, I don't think. So just describe your leadership philosophy, your approach as a leader. Before you do that, do you have an interest in leadership as a separate, not separate, but as part of where you are now? You're not a journalist, you'll always be one, I guess, at heart, but you've moved on from that. You're now a leader at City Press. But you're also a leader, opinion leader people look to in our society. So do you have views on leadership? What's your philosophy?
Sure.
How do you lead?
Thank you for saying that. So I've learned the leadership lessons, and I've learned to teach it through something called the Africa Leadership Initiative. It's a project with the Aspen Institute where you teach leaders to move from success, that's reaching your positional authority, to significance. What are you going to do for your society? And that's what really interests me. I'm interested in leaders like Sizwe Qasana, who makes this amazing series of leadership positions. He just does brilliant things. But if you look at the other work he does in the Tutuka Foundation, in the National Education Collaborative Trust, that's where he's trying to change his society. Mm. And it's there where I find myself being most interested. At the moment, I'm studying very closely the idea of leadership from the middle, where when a company or a society is in big trouble and not going where it's right, it doesn't have the right leader on top, it can be impelled by forces in the middle. And you saw that happening with Jean Monnet in the European Union. You've seen it in many corporations where forces from the middle can hold it together, can push it along. And that's where I'm really interested in seeing if South Africa can do that. Because I don't think, personally, I don't mean to be rude, we don't have a great president, but we're still a great nation. And how can we move forward even with him at the helm?
So certainly our experience is that leadership heritage of a Nelson Mandela philosophy and so on. I must give you my book that's coming out in a week or two. That leadership heritage seems to sit in the middle. You talk to any leader and they admire him. They want to follow his example and kind of do what he stood for. We may then say it's not always at the top, but right or wrong, that's an opinion. Is that what you're saying? And in a business, your middle management layer, just to be technical for a moment, they could, while like Eskom, brilliant example.
Yes.
Eskom is a mess at the top and it just continues to be a mess at the top. But it keeps moving forward. SABC, great example again.
SABC is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Those producers and newsroom people keep it moving. Huh?
Yeah, even though the junk is going on at the top. Okay, quick comment before we continue with Ferial. Louis, let's go around there, gentlemen. Anything she said about leadership? Oh, any thoughts, feelings? Leon, you ready?
I think if one can get a point made and it leads to a national debate.
Yes.
I think that for me is one of the purest forms of leadership. If one can lead a decision, or if a decision can culminate in a national debate, surely that has to be one of the most powerful events for changing ways of thinking. Because I think ultimately what leadership is about is to influence people to change the way they think. Because if the thinking has changed, the dialogue, the partnering, the sustainable relationships all just seem to happen a lot quicker.
And not everyone is in a position to necessarily allow something to become a national debate. But in a business, sometimes I have to not just lead where I'm leading, but maybe raise issues that result in a business-wise debate. Does it make sense? So your principle stands. In any area where we're in, we mustn't think, okay, I'm not a ferial, so I can't do a spear thing where it becomes a national. But I can do something that is so brilliant that becomes a countrywide debate in our business and changes the business for good.
Exactly.
Okay, Rich?
Yeah, it's all around dialogue, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is about dialogue, it comes back to what Leon said. It's about listening. So if I enter into the dialogue, and this is relationship as well. You know, if I enter into a dialogue with my partner, is she going to listen to me? Because I'm not going to dialogue if she's not going to listen to me. And no one's going to dialogue. And that's the big thing about it. We need to know and we need to be perceived that we're being heard. Otherwise, we're not interested in getting into that dialogue. It's just wasting our time.
Okay.
And that's often in business as well. If we have this dialogue session, but we know that management or the senior guys are never going to listen to us, why? We're not going to waste our time. We've got work to do.
Okay. Louis?
On Inferior's point of concern about she doesn't think we engage enough, I just want to add that, you know, Ferial, we meet hundreds of leaders all the years and we leadership positions ourselves. I've never seen a position not change when you meet somebody.
Someone's position.
Yes.
Now, for instance, Ferial mentioned now she may have had the same opinion after seeing the state president. But what happens, the engagement led that the cruelty and the harshness was taken out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So in our country, we love our freedom, but also it leads to self-indulgence in expressing your opinions. And maturity means that you engage before you express or make a final decision. So therefore, it takes out the harshness, etc. And often, though, I find in most cases, you do change your opinion somewhat. Often you had the same experience when you engaged President Zuma before, and people telling you, this guy can't take decisions, and he was a real danger to the country. But after your session with him, you have affinity with him, although you don't necessarily agree with everything he does.
No, I don't. Okay.
So just to come back to your tweet earlier about Deepak Chopra and the consciousness.
Yes.
So every time we engage with someone, it changes their consciousness. That's what Louis is saying.
And your own.
And your own. Okay, good point. Ferrell, your biggest concerns in South Africa? What are your biggest concerns from where you sit? You see the whole total picture. One of the blessings of being an editor, and maybe one of the curses. You know, you see so much. What are your biggest concerns? Top one, two, three.
Must I tell you the things that I think are working first?
Yeah, I do have a question what the positives are. So you're welcome to start with that.
I would like to, actually.
Yes, go for it.
I do a lot of talking and thinking about that. So I think things are replacing other things, like tourism. We're good at digital TV. We need to get even better at it. There's new sectors coming up, I think, that excite me because they offer us arrows for where the new economies are going to be built. I think our creative sector is in a particularly strong place at the moment, be it designers, hip-hop, and they often are world beaters on every single – we do this project called the World Class South Africans, and our creatives are inevitably winning global awards, so that makes me pretty excited as well. I think urban – regeneration, be it Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg. The city is stretching. So be it Doornstein, Steyn City, Umhlanga, cities are becoming the new thing that make us what we are. Things I worry about, mostly employment, because I think if we can offer especially our 3 million unemployed young people options and opportunities, then we'll begin to address almost everything else. And my other big concern is corruption. So every day pinging into my inbox, there'll be like 10 people wanting to blow the whistle at some incidents of corruption that they know about. And often I can take maybe one of those and turn it into a story. Obviously, you tell them to go to corruption, watch with the rest. But I think we underestimate the corrosiveness of corruption.
It's deep.
Yeah,
it's,
and I wonder why we're not more Brazilian that way. Like, did you see the Brazilians? Like, a million of them marched against corruption yesterday. That was pretty amazing.
Okay, so those are and race. I mean, you went through it very tough. Is that a big elephant in the room?
No, I think we talk about it all the time, every day, maybe even too much. But I do see that we are becoming more harsh in our racial discussions than perhaps we were 10 years ago.
And that problem being what? That'll be a problem. I mean, it means there's something else creeping in.
Of course. I mean, in a highly diverse society like ours, our greatest legacy of our birth, of our democratic birth, was that we didn't kill each other. If you look at Syria or Iran, not Iran so much, but many parts of the world do have violent conflicts because of difference, and we weren't that. So I think it's important public discussions we need to have, but harnessed by clever people. And I don't find someone harnessing it other than, say, Johnson Jansen at the moment.
So we need that. We need someone who would take that.
Like Madiba did.
We thought, here we are more than 20 years later, and it's still a big issue. Are women leaders stepping up enough? You seem to have tried that by becoming more visible, not just being the backroom editor.
Yeah, it was my instinct to be the behind the computer editor. But I found very quickly that people wanted to hear an opinion, and so learned to do that. The JSE is largely women-led. I did a lovely piece in the Business Day, sort of 7 women on its exco. That's quite fabulous. I'm not seeing it in other private sector companies. Certainly in the public sector, it's a good story. Huh?
Yeah. Women standing up is not just about position, I guess. It's about speaking up. It's about raising issues, becoming part of the conversation. What kind of leadership or leaders are you looking for? Just summarize that for us in South Africa. Define, what kind of leaders are you looking for?
I think people who are motivated for beyond self-interest, who have a public interest and a national interest firmly at the center of their beings. If I'm to put a face to it, it would have been Trevor Manuel. I'm very sad that we lost him to public life. In the private sector, I said, because I'm studying him at the moment, is Sizwe Kasana. I think people like that, who have made so much money, even Ketso Gordon, although I think he left PPC in a huge huff and shouldn't have. I think people who are seeing a bigger picture, who have enough money so they don't have to worry about self-interest.
And the question is, where are they? You know,
yeah.
You mentioned two examples. Are they out there, gentlemen? Those leaders who see the big picture? My question to you, we're running out of time. We're going to put someone on the line in a moment. And then the future of media. I know you have a view, almost a radical view, that says there's almost no commercial model in the future. I read that somewhere.
Mm.
So newspapers in particular is going in a very interesting direction. You said we're all journalists.
Mm.
Yes, it's a man with 350,000 Twitter followers in the studio.
Wow.
Okay, so he's a media entity on his own. Mm. Gareth is a media entity on his own.
Gareth got a million, huh? Or something like that.
Well, I know last I saw he was just under a million.
Yeah. Hmm.
Has he hit million?
No,
not yet. No, 956. Yes. He's close, yes.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, as someone once said, newspaper editors used to be powerful, and then someone created Twitter.
Exactly.
So just quickly your view on that, and then
sure.
We'll go to the line.
So I think that CliffCentral.com and City Press sit at the edges of the old and the new, and the market finds space for both of them. But one will inevitably become smaller and the other one will get bigger. I think it's interesting, this fracturing and diversification of the media. And it can be a death-defying place to be working in. I think both of us know that. But also pretty exciting because it's remaking itself. There's nothing certain in it at all. Huh?
Mm. Okay. Now, every week we have an executive from our sponsor, Sibanye Gold,
okay,
on the line, who shares an inspirational leadership thought with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we end off, each of you just share a message to the leaders. And I'll end with you, Feral, a message you have to our leaders out
sure.
there that will be listening to this, downloading the podcasts. But on the line we have the SVP Surface Operations, Dick Plaistow from Sibanye. And he's going to share a leadership thought with us, just to end off the show pretty much. Dick, nice to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Adrian, and look forward to it, and welcome to the listeners.
Go for it. Share with us your thought. I've got it in front of me, a good one.
Yeah, it's one that I don't know whether it's a mining industry-specific thing or whether it happens across the board, but successful people do not continue blindly doing the same things that have failed to produce results in the past, but rather think laterally and try a new angle with everything to gain but nothing to lose.
Mm. Okay, that ties in brilliantly with our earlier conversation. We spoke about the traps that leaders fall into in this very challenging world we find ourselves in. And one of the traps are that they keep doing the same things over and over. So you hit the nail on the head. Any other comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's very much born by personal experience. I really try to encourage my guys to think laterally and imaginatively and engender that thinking in the culture that I put into the business. And for me, it's worked in the past. And I think that a lot of the guys find it refreshing as well.
Dick, thank you for sharing that great thought with us and joining us on the Leadership Platform today.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
That was Dick Plaistow for our SVP, Senior Vice President, Surface Operations, Sibanye Gold, and, of course, our wonderful sponsor. Let's end off, gentlemen, and then our lady in the studio. Final thought for the leaders today, something they can take away based on our conversations or anything else.
I would strongly suggest never underestimate the tremendous power of having conversations with positive intent at every level, right in your families, with your reports at work, with everybody out there. In other words, don't be afraid to engage and have a positive conversation. It's a tremendously powerful tool.
Rich?
The success that consistency brings is predictable. If you think differently, you've actually just found an excuse not to be successful.
Okay, I remember that tweet.
I'll go with something less deep than that. lead by listening with innovation.
Lead by listening with innovation.
Innovation.
Okay. Feral Hafiji, our special guest.
I've had a lovely time with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for
so
coming.
What I've learned is a lot of what I do offends people, but to learn to do that in an inoffensive manner. Huh?
So if you're going to be out on the limb and do things that bring about necessary change, you're always going to play in that space of offending.
Sure.
So maybe another time we must talk about that art. You know, how do you do something that naturally would offend, but you do it in such a way that there's less of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone. That was wonderful having you all in the studio. Feral Hafaji from City Press, and our master lesson on the traps leaders step into in these difficult times, but then also zooming in on our special guest and what she's learned. Seeing the bigger picture, I learned a lot. I enjoyed it a heck of a lot. Go to leadershipplatform.com. You can download this podcast, of course, in the next hour or two. It'll be available. And next week, we've got the CEO of Grant Thornton. Okay, we're going to talk to him. A few weeks later, we've got Kgalema Motlanthe. What's your views on him, Ferial? Kgalema Motlanthe. I know he's now out of the picture, but I liked him.
A wonderful, measured jazz lover. I think that's going to be wonderful.
Yeah. And up next, the Candid Business with Alice Mnyandu and Arnie Hicks. I think they're going to have youth business leaders in the studio talking about economic transformation. So stay tuned. You'll enjoy that. Look forward to being with you next week.
The Leadership Platform was brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company. At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy. We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.